In this session, we're going to focus on one final aspect of research, and this is following on from, remember, our three-legged stool: praying, reading, questioning the passage. And this is something that you have done first. You've not been going to the commentaries. You have been just looking at your Bible and prayerfully reading it and asking particular questions, because, you know, we've all got minds to think, and it's amazing how far we can get without getting other people's assistance. So we wanted to encourage you in that, but now with a firmer idea in your own mind about what the text is saying, it is a good time to turn to commentaries. I'd like to begin with this great quote. Brian Chappell identifies two types of pastors who will never make great preachers. The first will not listen to what others say. The other will say only what others say. Just think about that for a moment. Two men who will never make great preachers. The first will not listen and therefore won't read commentaries. And the other will only say what others say. So the second guy, he's not ignoring the commentaries. He is overly influenced by the commentaries and is swept along in whatever current the commentator it happens to take him. And so I think something to say right up front is that we must steer a course between these two perilous rocks on either side. The rock of pride, okay, I don't need anyone's help. I don't need any other input. Nobody has ever thought things about this passage before that might be helpful for me. And the rock of pliability, on the other hand, where we just go with whatever the commentator says. Fee and Stewart put it like this: we need to be open and cautious. We need to be open and cautious. That's a helpful way of saying it. Or here's another way: we need to be humble and careful. We need to be humble enough to learn from the commentary, but we need to be careful enough to discern actually what they're saying and whether or not it's accurate or not. So if we have an ounce of humility and good sense, we will want to learn from John Stott. But on the other hand, if we have integrity, we will not want to preach John Stott's sermon. I remember once being told about a sermon somebody had heard. They'd been visiting a church on holiday, I think. And as they were listening to it, they recognized the sermon. And it suddenly dawned on them that what they were listening to was John Stott, Bible Speaks Today commentary on the passage. This preacher was virtually preaching Stott's commentary. So we want commentaries to inform, but not utterly influence. That's, in a sense, the main point I want you to get in this session about commentaries. They are a help, but they should not be driving us too much. So that caveat, how do commentaries help? How do commentaries help? Because I want to say to you that commentaries are wonderful servants. They are tremendously useful, and we could preach a sermon without them, but we wouldn't preach as good a sermon without them. So let me suggest several ways that commentaries are useful. First of all, historical reconstruction. They help us with historical reconstruction. That is, they assist us in better understanding the history, the time in history, the background, the customs which provide the backdrop to our passage. Remember earlier on, one of the sessions I talked about literary context, and we alluded to historical context. Don Carson explains why this is important. To understand a passage often requires a faithful and imaginative historical reconstruction of events. Actions and sayings, he explains, cannot accurately be cashed into today's currency until the preacher has seen what these presuppose and involve in their original setting in the ancient world. So if you're preaching a text which was penned in the first century AD, you will need to know some things about first century AD culture. You'll need to know some historical detail relating to your passage that will inform you. And this is where the commentators are helpful, because the best commentators have taken time and have used their skills in language and their understanding of Greek and other languages from the time to read the primary sources, other available literature. You, of course, can access this yourself. You can read Josephus and Tacitus, but I'm guessing that most of you, like me, don't have the time to do that. So this is what commentators do. They take the time, they serve us by reading these background sources, and then they bring to our attention any relevant historical information, cultural information, that would shed light on our passage. Let me just illustrate to show you what I mean with that. A few weeks back, I was preaching on 1 Corinthians 11, and one of the things Paul talks about in relation to the Lord's Supper and church divisions at the Lord's Supper, he says something strange. He talks about each member going ahead without waiting on anybody else, which I found a little bit strange in my historical context, because at Charlotte Chapel, we turn up pretty much at 7:30. The students come in 5 minutes later, but this wouldn't be a problem, somebody starting the Lord's Supper before somebody else. It just doesn't make sense to us. But I need to understand that my historical situation is different from first century Corinth. So Darrell Bock, in his commentary, gives me some background. Let me just read the quote to you. "The minority of well-to-do believers would have had the leisure time and resources to arrive earlier and bring larger quantities and finer food than the rest of the congregation. Following the practice of hosting festive gatherings in ancient Corinth," so this is a bit of historical background information, okay, of the kind of social scene that happened in those days, "they would have quickly filled a small private dining room. Latecomers, the majority, who probably had to finish work before coming on Saturday or Sunday evening, there was as of yet no legalized day off in the Roman Empire, would be seated separately in the adjacent room or courtyard. Those who could not afford to bring a meal, or a very good one, did not have the opportunity to share with the rest in the way that Christian unity demanded it." So I read that out just to give you an example of the kind of historical information that you get from a commentary. I mean, in that paragraph, I've learned something about the working habits of people at this time, the festive house gatherings in ancient Corinth and how that worked, even the way the rooms were set up, and the fact, importantly, that the poor could only come later, right? Because they worked 7 days a week, unlike their rich counterparts. So this kind of background is enormously important. Historical reconstruction, that's a massive service. Secondly, you still with me? Content clarification. By this, I simply mean that commentaries are a help in checking us on factual matters. Factual matters. Most commentators, let's face it, have a greater fluency with the original languages, for example, than we do. These guys have got, you know, a PhD in first century Greek and a PhD in ancient Hebrew. And so it may be that from time to time, they actually show up an error in our previous study. Maybe our word study, we've just botched it up or something like that. One of the things I find especially helpful with commentators is that they also help me to see issues of grammar. Okay, tenses of verbs and so on. Again, with their knowledge of grammar and grammar in ancient Greek or in Hebrew, which again, most of us are really not necessarily at the level to deal with. And so there may be a particular tense of a verb which is actually very significant for the meaning of the passage. And they will point that out to me and flag up something significant there. So I'm not very good on the grammatical side. I'm trying to work on that. But there's a good example of where they help me with content, just to clarify certain things. So historical reconstruction, they're a check for us, okay, in terms of our research. Something wrong with my research there, because this doesn't seem to fit. Commentaries are also very helpful with problem discussion. Sorry to tell you this, but most passages of Scripture have at least one or several naughty, difficult problems. We sometimes call these interpretive difficulties. where there's some debate over the meaning of a text or over a phrase or even over a word. And the good commentaries, not all commentaries do this, but the good commentaries will lay out for you the main possibilities of interpretation. So for any particular interpretive difficulty, there may be, you know, hundreds of different views, most of them very goofy, but there will be usually maybe two, three, or four main views where the majority of sensible people would go for an interpretation. So the commentator will lay this out, view A, view B, view C, view D. And again, the best commentators would also give you the reasons behind the views. So they wouldn't just tell you this, you know, some people think this, here's why they think that, and maybe give you a couple of strands of evidence of support. The reason that's particularly helpful is that you can then weigh up for yourself what you think. You can evaluate the evidence for yourself and say, which is the stronger argument? You know, what is the strongest supporting material? Little warning, some commentators don't do this at all. Some of them are very sneaky, and they simply propose their own interpretation. They maybe don't even mention that there's a debate over a particular verse, so you just need to watch out for that. And this is one of the reasons why we need to read at least one more, you might call them technical commentary. One of the more rigorous ones, because they don't tend to do that, whereas if we're reading Bible Speaks Today, we're more likely to get maybe just one view. So that's just something to be aware of. Legitimate application is the fourth thing. Commentaries help us to begin, and I emphasize that, to begin to think about legitimate application. Now, usually it's helpful to set apart some designated time to think solely about application after the research part of your study. Okay, because you need to get the information, here's what the text says first in its original setting before you start to think about applying it. But it's also the case, isn't it, that as we read through commentaries, they actually begin to give us at times lines of possible application. Now, again, maybe I should say some commentaries do this, and this is where it becomes interesting. The more technical commentaries give you very extensive detail. They give you all the different positions on every textual variant, but very little application, or no application sometimes, in terms of how it applies today. The other kind of commentaries tend to be more application-orientated, more preacher-orientated. They maybe read a bit more like a sermon. And very often, those are the commentators who will give you some sort of line of possible application. So, for instance, you might be reading a commentary on Philippians 2, which is a chapter on Jesus' humility and how that should be reflected in the church. And you might find a quote something like this in the commentary. The church in every age needs to engender this spirit of humility. Notice that, the church in every age. So this commentator is beginning to apply it out with the box of the text. Indeed, the modern day church is often perceived by the world, especially the media, to be arrogant, closed-minded, and abrasive. Right, so that's beginning to give me one line of application. How we're perceived by the world in terms of our humility. Right, it's maybe not something I've particularly thought of before as I've looked at the passage. So that's the kind of thing you want to just take a note of. You're not working out all the application here, but if I was taking notes on that, here's what I do. I put the letters AP, application, and I just take a little note of that line because I might want to come back to that and just think some more about it later. Commentators obviously cannot show us how to apply a passage to our specific congregation. Not exactly, but it can give us some ideas. And then fifthly, we're just whizzing through this, commentaries also help us in terms of enriching, sorry, can you see that? Okay, I'm in your way. Enriching communication. The commentators are very often wordsmiths. You know, you read these guys and you think, wow, that is just such a quaint way of saying things. They're good with English. They have a wide range of vocabulary. They have about 6 or 7 synonyms for tax collector. You know, you just thought tax collector, but they've got variant ways of talking about that individual. And so one of the things commentators do, the way they serve you, is that they give you words. They give you words. They give you ways of saying particular things. It's rather like when you get to know someone who comes from a different part of the UK. You share a common language to a degree, but perhaps they have peculiar terminology that they use. And after a while of being with them, you start to use the little words that you learn from them. Well, it's like that with the commentaries. You know, once you're reading, you know, 6 or 8 books, and you start to actually use some of their words even in your own preaching, and it just makes it more colorful. Mike Bulmore, who used to teach preaching at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, it was really from him that I first heard this articulated. And he says that he is, quote, an inveterate plunderer of words. And he points out that people own sentences, but they don't own particular words, right? No one's got a copyright on a word. And these guys, they got it from somewhere too, okay? We need to have integrity, of course. So again, you know, one of the things I would often do is I'm going through a particular commentary. If there is just some useful words, I might even just take a note of some of the things. And sometimes you just imbibe it and it comes out in your writing. So what a benefit commentaries are. They aren't perfect. They're not scripture. They need to be checked and evaluated. But they enrich our communication, they help with application, they facilitate problem discussion, and they're very helpful in content clarification, and they assist with historical reconstruction. I want to mention just 3 very simple practical suggestions as we come to the end of this session. And I'm aware with these, you know, when I'm doing these practical suggestions, I'm aware there's always a danger with this that it might come across as if my approach is the only approach or the best approach. It's just my approach. But I want to give you an idea of how somebody does it, and then you can change that and alter that however you want. But let me suggest this. First of all, read a balance of commentaries. In other words, if you're going to read 3 commentaries, don't read 3 technical commentaries and no practical commentaries. Or on the other hand, don't read 3 application-focused commentaries and miss reading a technical one. Try to get some kind of balance between the different types of commentaries, because the technical ones will help you with your content and your explanation, and the preaching ones will help you more on your application. So try and get a blend of the different types. We're going to do a little exercise in a minute just to get you to think about how do we even identify what are the different categories of that. Although I think hopefully it will be fairly obvious. What we're going to do actually in our exercise is we're going to look at 1 more technical commentary and 1 slightly more preaching focused. So if you've got more time, you know, just vamp it up on either side. We did a series on Jeremiah, and I just checked this other day to see what we did with it. 3 technical commentaries and 3 preaching commentaries. We just read a balance of either side. Have some note-taking system. This is just common sense. I've actually brought an example that I'll maybe just put on the table if you want to look at it later on, of just what I do. Very simple, just taking notes. The way that I tend to do it is, once I've got the basic structure of the passage, I just would split it into the verses. So verse 1 to 3 is a section in this one. And I would just take all the notes that are significant on verses 1 to 3. And it's just quoting different commentators. You know, there's an application bit. Oh, there's a good illustration. You also can get illustrations in commentaries sometimes. Taking notes of that. You know, just have some system for recalling the information. You can also do it verse by verse as well, just verse 1, verse 2, verse 3. Just take all the relevant notes that you need to take. Let me just say this, however, there is probably a danger in taking too many notes from commentaries. The more information that you put down in your notes, the more information you're going to have to cull when you come to preaching. So if you take down tons and mountains of detail, that's fine, but you're going to have to cull it. You're going to have to cut it back. So don't make it more difficult for yourself. Try to take the key information, the really good stuff, the significant stuff. You'll also find that a lot of the commentators repeat each other. All right, so when you get to the third commentary, some of them are saying the same thing three times. A lot of them just kind of copy from each other. So look for the new stuff. Look for the things that are actually going to help you. Okay, thirdly, and this is more of a going forward thing. I actually think it's helpful whether you're going into preaching or whether you're not going to be doing that. Just as a Christian, I think it's helpful in our day and age, in our culture, with our resources. Let's face it, most of us have got a pretty decent library, to think about trying to get a set of commentaries. Getting commentaries for every book of the New Testament, for example. I think that's a good goal for us all to have. It's the kind of thing that takes time. You know, I'm still slowly just building up my set. But I would say this, you know, commentaries are not cheap. For a more technical commentary, I just bought that O'Brien one. Where's it going? I've maybe given it to somebody. I just brought the Ephesians O'Brien one the other day. That was just under £30. Sam's by Golden Gay there, 30-odd pounds. The more technical ones are quite pricey. Bible Speaks Today are more around about £10. Some of the more preachy ones are smaller, so they're cheaper. So, therefore, take advice before purchasing commentaries. Really, there are good commentaries, there are great commentaries, and there are bad commentaries. And there's nothing worse than buying one and then realizing later on that it's just not really that helpful. So take advice before purchasing commentaries. And I would say try and build a set. You know, if some of you get into sort of itinerant preaching in the next couple of years, you might even want to build up a couple of commentaries just on a book. And when you go to preach somewhere, don't accept the invitation unless you get to pick and say, well, it's just Philippians again, because you've got four commentaries on Philippians. But, you know, just let me encourage you to think about that kind of thing. Build up a little library. Taking that a little bit further, and I'll just finish with this, and I'm sure you've probably got questions for the end, but some of you are sitting there saying, how would I actually know what commentaries to purchase and so on? Fee and Stewart, which we mentioned the other week, has a really good section at the end of it on the use of commentaries. It talks a little bit about how we might use them effectively, and it also gives a whole list of suggested commentaries for the whole of the Bible, which I think it's a pretty good list. Well, it's a very good list. You know, they know what they're talking about, these guys. They spend their life reading commentaries. Don Carson, New Testament Commentary Survey, fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. We're just getting some books for Acts. You know, that's what I read in the bus the other day coming in. What are the good commentaries? And Carson, he's fairly honest. At times, he's a little ruthless. But he will tell you, this commentary, just not worth buying. And he gives you recommendations on the one or two commentaries that would be the must-haves. And similar thing for the Old Testament is this guy called Tremper Longman III, I think that is. And it's just a parallel Old Testament version. So again, those are worth getting, or, you know, come into the church office, because we've got copies of them. It kind of feels daft, doesn't it, to buy a book to tell you what books to buy, but there you go. If you're a cheapskate, that's okay. There's tons of recommendations on the net, and actually on the blog, I've actually made a list of online links where all sorts of people are recommending. Seminaries, for example, recommending commentaries to their students. So there's actually quite a lot of decent recommending online as well, so that's something else to think about.